He is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. This is Ministry of the Badge.
William 236, hold traffic, shots fired. 500 East 41st Street, extended stay. Get on the ground! Get on the ground!
Shots fired.
Hands, let me see your hands right now! Hold on. Hey, partner, don't move! Don't move! He's still got the gun.
King of News, we now have a live look at North Caldwell Street, where CMPD has confirmed there has been an officer involved shooting. Now we're still working to learn details at this time, but I can tell you authorities right now are at
New Year's Eve 2017. Five officers from the Douglas County Sheriff's Department
Sheriff's Office
are responding to a 911 call.
Sheriff's Office.
Copper Canyon Apartments in Highlands Ranch, Colorado. Yep. Waiting for them, 37-year-old Army veteran Matthew Real.
Matthew, come out!
He has a history of mental health issues.
Matt, come out!
And unknown to them, a loaded AR-15 rifle.
Open the door!
Sheriff!
So the video that you just watched, what do you do when an officer and their spouse goes through an officer-involved incident? Doesn't necessarily have to be a shooting, but there are incidences. Welcome back. My guest today again is my wife, Paula. We are now into part two of Marriage and the Badge. We're going to get a little more deep today. We're going to let you in on what happened with us as a family. This goes back 20 years. Over 20, you know. 21 years, yeah. And this was a night where she's a scanner listener. Drives me nuts. But I'll let her explain her side. But anyway, this was a traffic stop gone very, very bad. And two officers were on a traffic stop probably 10 blocks from me. I heard those guys screaming on the radio. I went flying over there to help them, lights and siren. When I came upon the scene, the officers were nowhere near their car. I could hear them screaming on the radio for help. I was with another officer. He was a lieutenant on our shift. We arrived there just about the same time. I got out of my car so fast, I couldn't even, I locked myself in. That's how much in a rush I was to get to where these guys are and how much I could hear them screaming on the radio. I saw my lieutenant yelling at me. I couldn't hear anything because my lights and siren were going on. And he was waving his flashlight and telling me to actually go across the street. I never heard him. And because I didn't hear him, I saw him run up one side of a house. And so there was another side of another driveway. It was a duplex. And I ran up the other side of the driveway. And as I came onto the scene, I saw two officers fighting with a guy on the ground. And at the time, I didn't know who the officers were. I just saw one officer on the guy's head and one officer on the guy's legs. And they were flat out brawling. And I seen the guy do basically a push-up, stand both officers up like they weren't even there. I seen the guy buckle down and bull rush one of my partners right into a car. And he hit the car with a thud. His hands flew up in the air, and you know, I heard him just hit that gasp. And he started yelling. He's got my gun. And he started out with this high pitched, he's got my gun. You can hear it in his voice that he's afraid. And so, you know, I heard my lieutenant yell, tase him, tase him, tase him. And I saw him tase the guy. This was before he hit the car. So just before he gets bull rushed into the car, the taser just kind of irritated this dude. And after being tased, that's when he bull rushed my friend into the car. And so I hear him yell, he's got my gun. So I'm on the other side of the driveway and I start to pull my gun and I yell, does he still got your gun? And he yells out, oh my God, he's got my gun. And now this time the yell goes from that high pitched being scared to an exhausted, he's got my gun. He's just losing it, right? He's losing the fight. You can hear it. And I can see my lieutenant. He's trying to get the guy and he's not succeeding in doing anything. And so I have my gun out and I know, okay, we were taught if somebody takes an officer's gun, this is what we have to do. And I yelled to him and he doesn't, I don't think he heard me. He was too busy in the fight. And I then I heard my lieutenant yelling and I took my left hand and I put it on the guy's head because I could see his head moving around. And I drove my right hand between my thumb and my forefinger and my pointer finger. And I pulled the trigger and the trigger didn't go off. And I pulled it back again because the gun was out of battery. It was too far in. And I pulled it back and I pulled the trigger a second time and the gun went off. Muffled pop. I could tell you anytime I tell this story, the picture, it doesn't play like it used to as vivid, but it definitely plays. That muffled pop started a whole, like, time stopped. It was the strangest thing. You had a part of your mind, a part of my mind was trying to comprehend what was going on. And I wrote a book about this. And your mind is trying to figure out, okay, what the heck just happened? And part of you wants to cheer and be excited. And the other part of you is going, yeah, but that doesn't make any sense to cheer because look what just happened. And yet, you know, you survived something. Your mind is trying to figure out in that particular instance, the fight or flight. You've just survived the fight or flight experience. You hear people say your mind flashes before your eyes. You've heard people say it. And that's exactly what's going on. Your mind is flipping through its pages, trying to normalize the situation that you're in. And it's going, okay, yeah, you've seen this before. Oh, yeah. You've seen this in deer that you shot. Oh, yeah. All that blood. Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. And it has nothing to do with the person or the thing that you shot. Your mind is just trying to normalize it. It doesn't know any better. It's just trying to figure out, where have I seen this before? And I remember when I was writing my book and I wrote all this down and I took a lot of flack for a section of the book describing this as I'm describing it to you. And what I was trying to do is trying to best explain that survival of flight. Fight or flight. So all this blood is on the ground. It's pooling before it's on this car. It's coming down. It's dripping at my feet. And I'm trying to normalize this whole situation. And I remember, and I'm giving you a very rushed version of this, but and I remember looking down at my cocked gun. I was standing with there's a garage behind me. It's right behind me. And there's a garage light that's shining down upon this whole thing. And I'm kind of looking down at the car and the body laying in front of me. My lieutenant's on the radio calling for help. and the blood is coming down the hood of this car, and I could see it every dent, every, and it's dripping, you know. And I remember looking down at my gun, and those of you might remember the decock and holster, right? Oh, that's right. I just got done shooting now, decock and holster, and I remember putting my gun away. And the officer whose gun was being taken, we're all just kind of, I mean, you could just sense it, right? And there were two ladies that were there. Unfortunately, it was the mother and the daughter, or the mother and the sister of the person that I had shot. And, but the whole scene was just so bizarre because it you never experienced anything like this. And we kind of all looked at each other, and my lieutenant's like, you guys okay? Yeah. And after that, it kind of goes in a blank. I kind of walked down the driveway. I was told to go back to the department. Somewhere along the line, the radio says that I'm going to turn in my gun or whatever. And so I go down this driveway, and I go back to the department, and I was just in a, I mean, my mind was everywhere. And I'll have Paul explain her end of this. And I just remember going back to the department. I remember specifically before I opened the door to go into what we call our detective bureau, I felt this overwhelming sense of, and this was God talking to me without a shadow of a doubt. The one thing I can tell you is God was there with me the whole time. And this specifically was a time when I knew in my spirit. He said, son, I know how you feel, but you need to pray for that those two women that were there, the mom and the sister. And I just stepped back away from the door and I said, well, Lord, you know, take care of them. God was there with me the whole time. And I knew at the time, and I know to this day, and I've always said I knew how David felt. Because when you look at David in the Bible, he was a warrior. With the warrior, God is right there. And so that gave me comfort that the Lord would. And what was interesting about that was it wasn't about me. It was about me thinking about those who were affected in a way that I would never understand. And yet God's heart was for them. Now, isn't that interesting? And so I did. But that one experience told me, there's one more experience. But that one thing before I walked into the door, and my mind was all over the place. And that's how I knew it was God, because my mind wasn't going to think of those two ladies. I wasn't thinking about that at all. I remember seeing them. I remember doing whatever, but that came to my mind. That's God. And I don't even know if I had a doubt that, but remember, your mind is all over the place. You're thinking to yourself, what is going to happen now? Because you talk about it in academy and you kind of go over it, but they never really tell you all of what comes with it, right? I mean, they don't prepare you for that. That's why Paula and I decided to do SOS, because no one talks about these type of things. So when it comes to being a Christian and it comes to having to take a life in the line of duty, there has to be some sort of understanding that that's okay. So when I had to look back over time while I wrote my book and now doing this podcast and before that doing SOS, I had to think about, okay, why was I able to do this and get past it, whereas other officers may not be able to? Why? And I thought, because no one talks about it and there's no equipping them for it. So hopefully in the last episode, we gave you some lighthearted things to think about and we got a little more serious. But in this episode, we want to give you the tools that it will take that got us through getting over that officer-involved incident. Because maybe it's not a shooting that you go through. Maybe you're using your vehicle. Maybe you used your gun and you didn't. The person did not die. Maybe you had to use excessive force with your bare hands. Whatever it is that caused you to go into the, maybe you were the one who was hurt. Maybe you couldn't get out of that situation and you ended up getting hurt because you didn't do something. That's still an officer involved, isn't it? And it will rock your world. And we've talked to couples about this incident. We've had officers, experienced officers, come to us after our talks and shaking, crying, telling us about how they lost their families. And because it just rocks the very world of you. So when we did this, when we did our first seminars, we just let it all out there. And hopefully we can do that today on this episode. So I walked them through my part of it. What was your part that night?
So I was up cleaning our room because, you know, I'm a mother of six children. And 2 o'clock in the morning is a great time to clean your room. And as he had stated before, I am a scanner listener. I am not one for surprises. I never would want a lieutenant or a captain or a chief at my door to tell me that you've been involved in a shooting or you've been shot. I'd rather hear it for myself and come right away. So that night I was listening and I heard the two officers pull over a car. And then I heard from there that they were going to do another traffic stop. They'd finished the one and they were going on another traffic stop. And the next thing you know, they're yelling on the radio for backup. They were yelling and then they became screaming for backup. And I remember just saying, Lord, please don't let it be my husband that goes to that scene. And I don't, you know, I didn't want to be selfish, I guess, by him not going to the scene, but I could tell it was a very escalated situation. And being that I know the two officers, I knew that they weren't the type to get excited if there was nothing to get excited about. And the next thing you know, I heard his lieutenant say he was going, and then I heard Brian say he was going. And all I could do is just pray. And as soon as he had told me or told dispatch that he was going, after that, the radio went silent. And I remember saying, Lord, please just let me hear his voice. Let me hear something because this is not good. And his mic fired up and I could hear him coughing. And why it fired up and he was coughing, I don't know. And I said, oh my goodness, he's choking on his own blood. Well, his lieutenant got on and said that he was going back to 1019 to the department and he was going to turn in his service weapon. And I knew right then and there that he was the one that had shot someone. They don't give you any training as a wife. Even if I wasn't listening to the scanner and I had an officer come to the door or, you know, a brass come to the door, they don't give you a training on how to react to that or what you should do in that situation. And I called him on the phone and I said, did you get involved in a shooting? He said, yes. And I asked him a couple more questions and I said, can I come down there? He said, no. I don't know if you can. I'm not sure. You better not. And I ended up talking to his cousin who was on duty that night. And he said to me, I'm coming to get you. I'm going to take you down to the department. You need to be with him. So I went down there and they had him in a room all by himself because that's what they do. They separate you after an incident. They'll separate you. So, you know, you can do your report. And they let me in the door. They didn't let me go down the hallway into the room he was in, but they did let him come out for a brief moment just to let me see that he was okay. And when he came around the corner and I saw him, it was like I was looking at a stranger that he was a shell of himself. And I didn't, as his wife, I wanted to run and hug him and grab him and, you know, thank God that you're alive and, you know, you're coming home to me. But I knew that wasn't the right thing to do. I could tell by his demeanor. I could tell by the way he was walking. That wasn't the right thing to do. So the only thing I could do, he had thought he shot his hand. He didn't shoot his hand. It was a blowback from the gun. But all I could do is grab his hand to look at it to be sure that it was okay, because it's the only thing at the moment that seemed right. And from there, I left. And I went home. And I don't remember if I had told my children what happened in the morning or not. They weren't up when he got home. I don't think I took him to school that next day either. But officers were calling me, you know, asking me if I needed anything. Family was calling. Church people were calling. And it was wonderful. It was great. It was great support, but it became very overwhelming. And he had left the house to go spend some time with a friend to kind of just decompress. And I just remember going, I don't even know how to deal with this situation. I don't even know what to do. I don't know how to react. I don't know what the next steps are. I don't know where this is going to lead. But it leads you down a spiral. It leads you down, like you're spinning out of control. And it's those moments like that that you have to just step back and say, okay, Lord, you have to take full control.
Yeah. And so when I left the house that day, it took me a long while. I had to, there are parts that we talk about this all the time that I just forgot. Whether they were blocked out on purpose or whatever the case may be, whatever my mind had done, and I'm not talking about the incident itself, I'm talking about things afterwards. Some of the ways I acted, we'll get into a little bit of that. But so when I left the house that day, I remember it in one sense, just like Paula said, I had to decompress. So I went to a friend's house. We were playing video games. This is a buddy of mine, Brian, who I've known since I've been a little kid. He's one of my best friends since third grade. I just needed to escape, right? Just for a second. Mm-hmm. I called Brian my tether friend because he's the guy that knew me even before she did. And, you know, we were able just to go back and play video games. I mean, it's so stupid, right? But it was just, I don't even remember. It was a Nintendo, maybe the newest Nintendo. And it was good to get away and go back. That's the way I felt that day. Just to get away and go back. And why? Because Brian kept me. So when I was there and just decompressing, like I said, it's have a tether friend. Brian was that tether friend because he's the person that knew me before I became a cop. So did she. But just for that brief moment, it wasn't my wife. It was something from my past that kept me grounded to me basically floating away, right? There's no better way to say it. And I think that was one of the things that kept me grounded. So then I came home and she called me on the phone, I think when I was over at Brian's house, and she says I blew up. And I think the reason why I blew up was because I was, you know, now it's like snapping back to reality, right? Like, oh, yep, you're back now. It's you're not escaping. This is no longer your escape. So having that quick moment of escape brings you back. And that kind of brought me back, and now I went home. And, man, how long was I up? Was that after my walkthrough and everything, wasn't it? Yeah. So I had to go through a walkthrough that day.
You probably were up over 24 hours.
Yeah. So imagine, you know, I'm pumped full of adrenaline, up for at least 24 hours, 18 to 24 hours. I know it was all of that.
Oh, more than.
And now I'm escaping. I'm at my friend's house and doing all these things. And now I got to go back home, back to what reality. And why I was so angry about that, maybe because now I got to go back and face it again, right? Here I am back having to deal with family, having to deal with all of what's going on.
I think it was a reality.
Is that
what? I think really what it is it was a reality of everything to come.
Yeah, well, it could very well be. Yeah, and you're probably right. It's probably a reality that, you know, here you are, and now what's about to happen? Mm-hmm. So we go to bed that day, and I think I just hit the covers at some point and just passed out. That's all I remember. I just kind of hit the covers and passed out. And now we get up the next day. What happened the next day?
So the next day, I woke up before him, and I was looking at him, and he was still asleep. And he woke up, and he opened his eyes, and he said good morning to me. And I just said good morning because I wasn't quite sure what to say. I didn't want to trigger anything to cause him to be angry or, you know, whatever. I just wanted him to know that he was safe with me. And he started to tell me how the incident went down and walk me through what had happened, because he hadn't told me at that point what had happened. And he told me what happened, and he said to me, I now know what it felt like for David when he faced Goliath. And it's overwhelming. And yet I know what I did was the right thing. And I'm listening, and I could tell that his heart was sincere. I could tell that his heart was where it needed to be. And after he was done talking, I ran out to get the newspaper because I knew that it would be the front page of the news. And we have two colleges in this town, and I won't say which ones they are, but they play basketball together. And across the top of our newspaper, it said that college versus that college. And underneath, it said David versus Goliath. And then his photo or his incident was underneath. And, you know, it wasn't a joyous moment. I wouldn't call it that, but I would call it a moment that the Lord showed us, I'm right here. I'm right here. And when things got tough, he always reminded us he's right here. You know, I mean, he's never left us. He never forsaked us. And he had us all the way through it, even to this day. You know, there are times that we still have to deal with the situation. And he's given us strength. And it should have been something that tore us apart and knocked us down. And it was something that together, with only the strength of the Lord, that we've made it through this.
Yeah. So, again, God will show you in no uncertain terms, and especially those of you who wear the badge, who've been given a duty to be a minister of the badge. When you give to him your life, he will, by every means possible, show you, especially when you go through these types of situations, he is there every step of the way. And just in those couple incidences, you can see through our lives he was there. Well, he'll be there again. Fast forward now to a year later. And this is about the year, quote, anniversary. I don't know it how else exactly. to say it. It was exactly a year after the shooting. Anniversary is probably not the right word, but you know what I'm saying.
So I can tell that part of
okay,
it.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I feel like it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had called his friend Brian and Don to come over and just sit and talk with him. He was just having such a, just with all of the pressure that was on him for lawsuits and, you know, investigations and blah, 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 and yada, yada. And there were billboards going up and there was newspaper articles. There were flyers that were put on every one of the cars at our church, calling him a murderer and things of that nature. And it was very hard for us as his family, because that's not who he is. He has never been. He's always been a very calm, a man of integrity. And to see these things put out there about your husband and your father, our kids, it was very hard on our family. And he didn't like he didn't care so much that they were saying it about him, but how it affected our family. Being, you know, I mean, I think it affected you a little bit for people to say that about you, but not, I think, as much as it affected you that people were saying that and your family saw it. You know, it was scary for our kids to think, oh my goodness, what are they going to do to my dad? You know, for me, my tiger claws come out and how dare you speak of him that way? So that day I'd called Brian and Don. I said, you got to come over and you just need to have a talk with him and just reassure him and give him encouragement. He really needs some encouragement. And so they did. And Don had brought his kids and it was a warm winter day. And so we sent the kids out to play. And the next minute they were in the house screaming and yelling, they're coming to get my dad. They're going to kill my dad. Oh my goodness. So lo and behold, a family member had come to our home and left stuff on our porch. And so of course we called the police department and they came and collected the evidence. It was a very surreal moment because my husband was sitting with a blank stare. I had officers all over my home. And I had children upstairs crying, thinking that their dad was going to get murdered. And I have officers in my house doing crime scene investigating. And I'm having to be the calm, collective one and go bounce back and forth between there and downstairs, upstairs, downstairs. And one of the moments, I was wiping the tears from my daughter Olivia's eyes. And she was 5 years old, and she said, don't worry, Mama, our house is built on a solid rock. Theirs is built on sinking sand, and nothing can destroy us. And, you know, I taught them that. You know, the Bible tells us that our house is, you know, if we build it on the foundation of Christ, that nothing's going to destroy you. No weapons formed against me will prosper. And it was just a great reminder from our five-year-old little girl that, what are you worried for? What are you scared of? Did it make it easier? No, but it made it reassuring, you know, that the Lord had us again. You know, and we had been through a couple other situations, and I won't mention all of them, but we were on 24-hour surveillance quite a bit because of threats and things like that. And we had just gotten off of 24-hour surveillance. And here we were again, you know, a squad outside our house 24 hours because, of course, the threats were coming. You know, and there were billboards for numerous years. And there's still stuff out there 21 years later. And it's hard as a wife when you see things that are complete and utter lies. And as a wife, I've had the privilege of reading the reports, you know, and one thing that is left out is this person had tried to take the officer's gun before my husband even arrived on the scene. And the two officers were able to stop it then. And they don't mention that part, that he had already tried once to take his gun. They only mention the one part. And it's very hard to see lies just spewed and spewed and spewed. And you just have to take it. And I think that as officers, you don't always feel supported by your department. I know the street cops supported him. You know, they stood behind him. And I know that the, you know, brass stood behind him. But being, you know, they work for the city, they're a little bit more reserved, I feel like. But as a wife, what do you do with that? As children, what do you do with that? There isn't a book written on how to deal with that. But just don't let them shut down. You know, don't let them become so introverted. You know, we had talked about in the last episode about getting you to open up and getting your officer to open up. Make it your job. Make it your joy to open them up. Bring them back because they're down there. They're in there. They haven't left. Nothing's really changed. And just like when he said he went and played video games and things with Brian, that was just him being who he is. That lighthearted video game, laughing, going out to dinner, you know, and just let him have that time. They need it. You need it. They need it. But that night was really hard, you know, and there's more times, you know, that we've had to deal with. And when your kids know every car on your road, they know every license plate, they know where every car lives. And when there's another car in the neighborhood, all of us are standing at the window going, where does that belong to? Who does that belong to? Why is it here?
Is that more prominent during times like that?
I think so. I feel like, though, in the environment that we're in, I feel like that's becoming more and more. The more officers' wives that I speak to, their heads are on a swivel. You know, I don't like to sit with my back to the door. If you're with me, I have to sit with my back to the door. But I never used to be that way. You know, I walk into a restaurant. I know where everybody's sitting. I know approximately how many people are in that restaurant. I know what they're wearing. You know, I never used to be like that. And I watch them. I watch their body language. You know, we would go to dinner and there had been times when we would run into people that you had arrested. And, you know, and thankfully you were a good cop. You know, you were a cop that was a man of integrity. And so thankfully we've never had any bad incidences with that. But we've also been, you know, in places and you've had people that you've arrested and run up and hug you and thank you for what you did for them. I remember one time in particular, we were hired to clean out a foreclosure. And we're cleaning it out, and I come walking out the door, and this huge man was coming up from behind you, and I think you had headphones on or something, and you didn't see him come in and didn't hear him come in, and I'm trying to get your attention without, you know, being too obvious, and all of a sudden you turn around, and this guy towered over you. He was big, and you said, you know, and you didn't even show any kind of reaction. You just turned around and said, hey. He goes, hey, do you remember me? And you said, you know, help me remember. He goes, we stood in this street right here, and you told me that I'm better than this. I can make something of myself. And he says, and I want you to know I did make something of myself. I signed myself up for school, and I'm going to school, and I'm making myself better. And I'm not going to be in this spot anymore. I, because of your words, am going to do better. But my first reaction was, who's this guy and what's he going to do? You know, and that's not fair. That's not fair to that person. It's not fair to me. And it's not fair to you. It's not fair to our kids, right? To have to live in that constant head on a swivel, everybody's out to get you. You know, I was just reading, we had an officer shot in Milwaukee, and it just breaks my heart. And I see these officers that have been shot and killed and or shot and wounded. It doesn't even matter. The fact that the disrespect is so incredible. There is no respect for the law anymore. One of the things I was reading is that the officers in Milwaukee in particular, I know all over the world this is, or, you know, all over the world this is happening, but in particular Milwaukee, that the officers are burned out. You know, they're being forced to work overtime. You know, they're not getting days off, and their families are suffering. And one of the things I was reading is the wives and the families are exhausted. They're suffering. You know, and how do we get past that? How do we get past that?
So what would you say? Because we've been through those exhausting times, and obviously we made it to the end of my career. And this is surviving the officer-involved incident. So what did you do in particular that helped us get through that situation? Because there was a point in time where you had to carry the load, both loads, mine, yours, the kids, so all loads. And this is why I said, I think I said before in the last episode, credit you. I know, and I could say this manly enough, there is no me without her. You are not a good officer without your spouse being very supportive. It's very tough. And those of you who know what I'm talking about, again, we know this because we've had officers come up to us and say these type of things. We've heard, I've lost my family. I lost my wife. I lost my spouse. So we also know that's a tough situation. So what did you do to get us through those times? Because those officers' wives are exhausted. Their spouses are exhausted. You hit a point of exhaustion. How did you get through that?
Well, you know, we don't have time to go into a lot of detail. This right. is just a short piece of, you know, what we've gone through.
Correct.
And obviously we go through a lot more detail when we present to officers, and it's different because we can have one-on-one questions and,
right.
you know, with conversation and better our answers. I feel like according to their question, but the one thing that I did, you know, I'm very good at yelling at my wash machine. It doesn't talk back and it always agrees with me. And one day, probably about 4 years in, you know, we're still suffering through lawsuits. We're still all, you know, all these different things. And I was picking up my laundry and throwing it into the wash machine and yelling at my laundry. Or yelling at my wash machine, I don't deserve this. This isn't what I signed up for. I would leave. I don't want to get divorced, but I want to leave. I want to get out of here. And at that moment, God used my earthly father to remind me that divorce isn't an option. Leaving your husband is not an option. He isn't doing anything to you that affords a divorce. You don't get to go. And I know that. And I know that's how my Lord feels. But he used my earthly father. My earthly father didn't even know I was feeling this way, for the record. But he used him to remind me of how disappointing it would be if I gave up. And I said, fine, I don't want to get divorced. I just want to leave. I want him to go. I want him to get out of here. I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to carry this load anymore. I don't want to work 2 and 3 jobs and come home and clean the house and take care of the kids and, you know, do everything else that I had to do and deal with the emotions that he was going through because of the pressure and the stress of his job. And the Lord stopped me in my tracks and said, this isn't about you. And I literally was having a conversation with him saying, how could this not be about me? I am suffering. He goes, you are, but this isn't about you. And I said, fine, then who is it about? It's everybody around you that's watching you and watching what you're going to do. And is what you're doing an example of what I would do? And now I'm arguing with the Lord. And I said, fine. I have been praying. I have been asking. I have been doing all of these things. Why in the world is it not getting better? And he said to me, in no uncertain terms, you're praying wrong. I'm thinking, there's no way to pray wrong. How could you pray wrong? Did you know there was a way to pray wrong? Yes, you've reminded me of that at times.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's probably praying selfishly is really what he referred to. I said, fine, Lord, how do you want me to pray? And he said, when he comes home at 7 o'clock in the morning, he said, you wait in that bed till he's asleep. And I want you to lay your hands on him. And I want you to say, Lord, change my heart and make it ever new. And in the meantime, soften his. And I thought, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my whole life. That's just stupid. Now, why would I pray that? That's dumb. I don't need to change my heart. He needs to change his. Fine. That's what I'll do. So that next morning, he came home from work, and I laid my hands on him, and I said, basically is how I, that's really kind of how I prayed. But I did it, right? The next morning, I prayed again, and the next morning, I prayed again. And within 2 weeks, it was like this cloud had lifted off of your shoulders, and there was a smile on your face again. And about 2 months or so after that, he started teaching the Bible at church, and the joy just started rushing out of him again. And I thought, wow, that's all it took? But it wasn't all that it took. You know, we had to go through a storm. You know, when a storm comes, people... people forget that in a storm, there's thunder and there's lightning and there's rain. But what does the lightning do? The fierceness of the lightning, and, you know, it can be devastating. You know, it can do some severe damage. But yet lightning is needed for trees to grow, for grass to grow, for flowers to grow. The rain is obviously needed for the flowers and the trees to grow. So if you look at your storm and you say, all right, there's a lot of rumbling, there's a lot of lightning, and there's a lot of rain. But in the end, there's going to be beautiful flowers, and there's going to be beautiful grass. And trees are going to be luscious, and the oxygen is going to be great coming from these trees. You know, you had said to me one time that Job had suffered so many things. And when Satan stood before the throne and asked, who can I go down and try to deceive? Basically, I'm paraphrasing. He said, have you considered my servant Job? And you had said, wouldn't it be something if the Lord said, if you considered Brian and Paula? And, you know, it really shook me. What an honor to even be considered, that you could stand strong enough in a storm with the Lord's strength to endure, to get the beauty in the grass and the trees and the, you know, after the storm. And is it hard? Oh, it is hard. And again, we're just paraphrasing and giving you a small version of of the things that we've been through. But in the end, here we are 34 years later, and I am happier than anybody in the world. I always say I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA, and I truly mean it. You know, and our kids, I mean, we have six kids. We have five girls, one boy. We have 10 grandchildren. We have three of our children in the ministry, one that works with autistic children, one that's a stay-at-home mother that wasn't supposed to have any kids at all, and she has five. They told us no kids, she'll never have them. Well, the Lord proved them wrong. She has five. And our son, who is working and doing well for himself. So, you know, you worry about what your kids are going to do and how they're going to handle it. Well, ours came out on top.
You know, the one thing that and we might have to do an episode, I'm going to have to do one with our kids, but you said a lot in your last bit of what you had talked about. But what's interesting to me is the theme of what you said was, don't make it about you. This is as much about the other person and those around you than it is about you.
Right.
And obviously, that was the key for you to help me along, because you were taken out of yourself and made to worry about me and the kids, and the focus then was no longer on you and your internal. But that's interesting. You were given the external to worry about and then to deal with. And while doing so, God took care of your internal. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I just thought about that as you were speaking about that. It became about the other person. Yep. Love your neighbor as yourself. Mm-hmm. Your neighbor first. And then love the Lord thy God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your mind. That's exactly what Jesus said. And that's exactly what you did. Man, that's a good way to end it, I do believe. Hopefully in the ramblings that we just did gave you some idea. We do this, like I said, we want to do this on a regular basis. If you want at all for us to come and do Surviving the Officer Involved Shooting, I have several different seminars that I do, that we do for officers. And you can see all this, you can read all this in my book. I haven't talked about it up until this point, but I did write a book. You can get it on Amazon. It's called The Fateful 2 Minutes. It will give you the whole story, our whole testimony as to what exactly happened. But on this episode of Ministry of the Badge, we just wanted to be frank with you and talked about our experience. I mean, it goes even deeper than that.
Yeah. I feel like, too, if there's any questions that you have, maybe you should give your email or you know.
Yeah, chaplaingonzo@gmail.com. You can email me. You can throw some questions below on the YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to me on RSS or on your podcast, on Apple Podcast, chaplaingonzo@gmail.com. I hope this will open up frank conversations. I hope this will make you think. I know and believe that this is our ministry together. We have had the privilege of speaking to other officers. We have had the privilege of healing some marriages, I guess you could say, by having these frank conversations. And that's why she decided to have this conversation with you all here in Ministry of the Badge. Again, we do this for about 1 hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours, but I didn't want to do that long of a podcast. That's why we cut it kind of in half. It's already an hour. It'll be a little less than the hour, but nonetheless, hopefully this gives you some idea. Go outside yourself. Think about the other people that are around you. And I'm going to tell you what, it's tough, man. Is it tough? There's nothing easy about it right now. You officers and you Border Patrol guys and you ICE guys, you guys got it rough right now. You officers who are working overtime constantly, your departments are down. Man, oh man, oh man, I don't envy you at all. I didn't have to go through a lot of that stuff. We didn't have to go through a lot of that. But hopefully what we gave you will give you some inkling and some clue, at least to go seek out help. Reach out to us an email. We'll do the best we can to answer you back. We're frank. We are who we are on here. This is our ministry. And we have a lot of plans for cops in the future. And we know that the Lord is going to provide those plans and provide for us. But for now, this is the way we're going to come to you. I thank you again for listening to Ministry of the Badge. And I'm going to say what I've always said. If you want to be the best minister of the badge you can be, the best warrior you can go out and be, the best officer, the best Border Patrol guy, the best ICE officer, Secret Service, you name it, you're it. There is only one way to do that, and that's to become a servant of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, Christ Jesus. I hope you subscribe. I hope you keep listening. I hope you continue to do. Thank you, Paula, for coming on Ministry of the Badge. I appreciate you coming on. I know you don't like to be on camera.
No.
I know you don't like to be the center of attention, no. But I appreciate you doing it for me and for them.
You're welcome.
And thank you for visiting Ministry of the Badge. Thanks.
For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. You've been listening to Ministry of the Badge.